ಜಾಯಂ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾದ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿವ್ರಾಜಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಶತಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ ಹಿಸ್ ಡಿವೈನ್ ಗ್ರೇಸ್ ಎಸಿ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಶ್ರೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ಕೀ ಜಯ. ಅನಂತಕೋಟಿ ವೈಷ್ಣವ ವೃಂದ ಕೀ ಜಯ. ಗ್ರಂಥರಾಜ್ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ ಭಾಗವತಂ ಕೀ ಜಯ. ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್. ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್. ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರು ಅಂಡ್ ಗೌರಾಂಗ. ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ. ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ. ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ. ಗ್ರಂಥರಾಜ್ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ ಭಾಗವತಂ ಕ್ಯಾಂಟೋ 4 chapter 30 text 43. Maitreya uvacha iti pracheto virabhi abhishtuto hari pritastateti aha sharanya vatsalaha ಅನಿಚ್ಛಹತಾಂ ಯಾನಮತೃಪ್ತಚಕ್ಷುಷಾಂ ಯಯೌ ಸ್ವಧರ್ಮಾನಪವರ್ಗವೀರ್ಯಃ ಆಸ್ ಫಾರ್ ಆಸ್ ಪಾಸಿಬಲ್ ಟ್ರೈ ಟು ರಿಸೈಟ್ ಇನ್ ಯುನಿಸನ್. ಮೈತ್ರೇ ಉವಾಚ ಇತಿ ಪ್ರಚೇತೋಭಿರವಿಷ್ಟುತೋ ಹರಿ ಪ್ರೀತಸ್ತಥೇತಿ ಆಹ ಶರಣ್ಯ ವತ್ಸಲಃ ಅನಿಚ್ಛಹತಾಂ ಯಾನಮತೃಪ್ತ ಚಕ್ಷುಷಾಂ ಯಯೌ ಸ್ವಧಾಮಾನಪವರ್ಗವೀರ್ಯಃ. ಮೈತ್ರೇಯ ಉವಾಚ ಇತಿ ಪ್ರಚೇತೋಭಿರವಿಷ್ಟುತೋ ಹರಿ ಪ್ರೀತಸ್ತಥೇತಿ ಆಹ ಶರಣ್ಯ ವತ್ಸಲಃ ಅನಿಚ್ಛಹತಾಂ ಯಾನಮತೃಪ್ತ ಚಕ್ಷುಷಾಂ ಯಯೌ ಸ್ವಧಾಮಾನಪವರ್ಗವೀರ್ಯಃ. ಮೈತ್ರೇಯ ಉವಾಚ ಇತಿ ಪ್ರಚೇತೋಭಿರವಿಷ್ಟುತೋ ಹರಿ ಪ್ರೀತಸ್ತತೇತಾಹ ಶರಣ್ಯ ವತ್ಸಲಃ ಅನಿಚ್ಛತಾಂ ಯಾನಮತೃಪ್ತ ಚಕ್ಷುಷಾಂ ಯಾಯೌ ಸುಧಾಮಾನಪವರ್ಗವೀರ್ಯಃ. ಇತಿ ಪ್ರಚೇತೋಭಿರವಿಷ್ಟುತೋ ಹರಿ ಅನಿಚ್ಛಹತಾಂ ಯಾನಮತೃಪ್ತ ಚಕ್ಷುಷಾಂ ಯೂಯೌ ಸ್ವಧಾಮಾನಪವರ್ಗವೀರ್ಯಃ.
Such eagerness for Bhagavatam is amazing.
Iti pracheto viravishtuto hari pritasvateha ನಿಚ್ಛತಾಂ ಯಾನಮತೃಪ್ತ ಚಕ್ಷುಷಾ ಯಯೌ ಸ್ವಧಾಮಾನಪವರ್ಗವೀರ್ಯಃ. ಮೈತ್ರೇ ಉವಾಚ ಇತಿ ಪ್ರಚೇತೋಭಿರವಿಷ್ಟುತೋ ಹರಿ प्रीतस्तथेति आह शरण्यवत्सलः अनिच्यथातां तृप्तचक्षुषा ययो स्वधामानपवर्गवीर्यः.
लेडीस् प्लीस्.
शरण्यवत्सलः तोभिरभिष्टुतो हरि प्रीतस्तथेताः शरण्यवत्सलः अनिच्यतां यानमतृप्तचक्षुषां ययौ स्वधामानपवर्गवीर्यः. प्रीतस्तथेत्याह शरण्यवत्सलः अनिच्यतामावृतचक्षुषा ययौ स्वधामानपवर्गवीर्यः.
मैत्रेय उवाच. मैत्रेय सेड् इति दस् प्रचेतोभि बै द प्रचेतस् Abhishtuta, being praised. Harihi, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Pritaha, being pleased. Tatha, so. Iti, thus. Aha, said. Sharanya, to the surrendered souls. Vatsalaha, affectionate. Anichchatam, not desiring. Yanam, his departure. Atrupta, not satisfied. Chakshusham, their eyes. Yayau, he left. Swadhama, to his own abode. Anapavargavirya, whose prowess is never defeated. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya. The great sage Maitreya continued, My dear Vidura, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the protector of surrendered souls, being thus addressed by the Prachaitas and worshipped by them, replied, May whatever you have prayed for be fulfilled. After saying this, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose prowess is never defeated, left. The Prachetas were unwilling to be separated from him because they had not seen him to their full satisfaction. Purport. The word Anapavargavirya is significant in this verse. The word Ana means without. Pavarga means the materialistic way of life. And Virya means prowess. The prowess of the Supreme Personality of Godhead always contains six basic opulences, one of which is renunciation. Although the Prachetas desired to see the Lord to their full satisfaction, the Lord left. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, this is an exhibition of his kindness to innumerable other devotees. Although he was being attracted by the Prachetas, he left. This is an example of his renunciation. This renunciation was also exhibited by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he stayed with Advaita Prabhu after taking sannyas. All the devotees there wanted him to stay a few days longer,
where Lord Chaitanya left without hesitation. The conclusion is that although the Supreme Lord has unlimited kindness for his devotees, he is not attached to anyone. He is equally kind to his innumerable devotees all over the creation. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. The word Bhagavan, as we understand, means the one who is a possessor of great opulences. Like there is Vidyavan, Dhanavan, one who is rich, one who is knowledge, etc. Viryavan. So Krishna is called Bhagavan because he does not have one opulence, but he has six opulences. Actually, he has unlimited opulences. But according to Parashara Muni, he has these six opulences simultaneously in infinite quantities. Such a person is called Bhagavan. So his prowess is not material, because there is nobody in this world, in this universe, in this entire material creation, who can say that they possess all of these six opulences to infinite degrees. There are persons who possess some, maybe one opulence to a large degree. So Prabhupada usually would say in a lecture, you may have $5, somebody may have $1,000,000, somebody may have $1,000,000,000 or many billions of dollars. But nobody can say that I own this entire planet. Nobody can say I own this entire universe, just in terms of wealth. Even if there is a person who can say, let's say, I own the entire universe, that person is going to die and his ownership is going to go away. So there is no person who is ultimately wealthy. Krishna is. Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. I am the controller and proprietor of the entire universe, of everything that's in creation. Or nobody is strong. There are many persons who want to be strong. They're very strong wannabes. There are some people who are strong and they have titles, Mr. Universe. Actually, that title has no meaning. Because first of all, according to their own science, there are no human beings anywhere else other than on Earth planet. So what does the title Mr. Universe really mean? Nothing. It's just to fan the false ego. Mr. Universe. And Mr. Universe means he can be really ugly looking, but he has very nicely built biceps and triceps. And that too, for how long can he hold the Mr. Universe title? One more year, until someone else competes for Mr. Universe. Generally, there was, before the more popular Mr. Universes, there was Muhammad Ali, right? Swift like a butterfly, in like a needle, out like a plow, whatever the terms were. And he was the most feared boxer. But after all of his so-called prowess, poor fellow was struck with Parkinson's disease. He can hardly lift a teacup anymore. So what happened to all his prowess gone. So even if someone has some strength, it may be temporary, not eternally. So Krishna is called Bhagavan because he is very, very strong. For example, when Krishna was fighting with Jarasandha, and Jarasandha is one of those obstinate, foolish people who don't get a message quickly. Their email and voicemail system is really terrible. They don't get the message. So when Jarasandha wanted to fight with Krishna, Krishna single-handedly defeated Jarasandha. And Jarasandha brought with him an army that had 17 Akshauhinis, which, by the way, is more than the Pandava and the Kaurava armies combined during Battle of Kurukshetra. And not once, but 17 times, Krishna single-handedly embarrassed Jarasandha. But the fellow didn't get the message. He thought, next time I will conquer Krishna. 17 times, single-handedly. So this is strength. He's the real Mr. Universe. So one of those opulences in this purport that's being glorified is renunciation. The renunciation is that the Prachetas have really attracted his mercy. He has personally come to see them. They're underwater. He's also there. The next verse is that now they've come out of the water. They will come out of the water. So they have an undersea vision, sighting of the Supreme Personality of Godhead who came flying on his Garuda. Although they've offered such wonderful prayers, he's very attracted to them. He leaves, because he's not attached to anyone. And Jiva Goswami gives a beautiful, this is a rasa explanation, it's not an ontological explanation. Rasa explanation, that there are other devotees that Krishna also needs to go to. So he left the Prachetas, so he can give his darshan and mercy to other devotees. Now in the previous verse, yesterday, he was glorified as Vasudeva. Vasudeva means all-pervading, he's existing everywhere. So if he's existing everywhere, does he really need to go anywhere? If a devotee in India is calling him, he's already in India. If a devotee in Alaska is calling him, he's already in Alaska. He doesn't have to go from India to Alaska. Oh, that bhakta is calling me, so I have to go from here. It's a rasa explanation, that he likes to go to his different devotees. Meaning, he's not attached to any one particular person or persons. Generally when we hear, he is not attached, it does not mean. So let's talk about what is attachment that we are familiar with. We are familiar with attachment on the bodily platform. We are attached to things that come from our body, called children, labor, money. But there are some things that come from the body that hopefully we're not very attached to. Stool, nails, hair. Nails, I can't say. People are. Hair, that also people are. But these are also coming from the body. So stool is something that comes, and most people don't pay attention to it, just walk away from it, flush and go away. But that is also coming from the body. But we make a distinction, this is not. But as soon as it's a child, whoa, my child, my children, my labor, my money, my house, my something. That's an attachment, because it's a sense of it is coming from me, therefore it belongs to me, and I am the enjoyer of it. So this attachment comes from a wrong sense of identity. When there is a true sense of identity, that kind of attachment is not there. There is attachment from affection. but not attachment from ignorance. So Krishna is attached to us out of affection, not out of ignorance. In the previous verse, he is always sattvaya, situated in knowledge, situated in pure transcendental platform. So ignorance is not something that can touch Krishna. So if he is so loving to the prachetas, why did he go away? For many reasons. One, according to Jiva Goswami, he wants to go to other devotees. Another is that by his leaving, he is enhancing their desire to see him again, which is actually an impetus, which is actually an encouragement in devotional life. And a third is that he is renounced. He's not, oh, they like me here, I will stay here. That is not the kind of relationship Krishna has. So the example is given of Lord Chaitanya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after he came back from Gaya, came to Advaita Acharya's house. And all the devotees, they had mixed feelings. To see Lord Chaitanya as a sannyasi was very difficult for them, because Nimai Pandit had beautiful curly hair, long, very attractive form. And when he would walk around in the precincts of Nadia, they would be very attracted to seeing him. And now he has returned in a sannyas cloth, shaved, with a water pot and a danda like an ordinary sannyasi. It was very difficult for them to see that. Yet they were very happy because he has returned. And so they asked him to stay with him for a while. So he obliged for a few days, but then he left. And it's described that when he left, he didn't turn back even once. He just looked forward and he walked away. So for most people, they say, whoa, that's so heartless, because they like to keep looking back. Then others will also wave, then they'll go a little forward, he'll wave again, they'll wave again, and that's the expression of how difficult it is to be separate. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu looked forward and walked away. It said that Lord Ramchandra also walked away like that from Ayodhya. The whole of Ayodhya followed him. They followed him outside Ayodhya, they went all the way, they crossed the river with him, and they stayed in the forest where he was also staying for the night. Lord Ramchandra realized, this way they're going to come all the way to Dandakaranya, South India, everywhere I go, they'll be following me. So quietly in the middle of the night, he woke up Lakshmana and Sita Devi and said, just walk, don't make any noise, just keep walking from here. If they know that we are leaving, if we leave in the morning, they will all follow us. And quietly in the dead of night, they went away. These are activities of enhancing separation. So Lord Chaitanya also left there meant a couple of reasons, right? One is, as a sannyasi, he had certain functions to perform. He wanted to travel and preach and distribute Krishna consciousness. At the same time, he enhanced the feelings of separation for all the residents of Navadvipa. Similar is a description of Krishna's renunciation. Prabhupada says he had so many gopis who he would associate with, hundreds and thousands. Yet, he walked out of Vrindavan and went to Mathura. That was an expression of his renunciation. He could have said, no, they're all loving me here so much, Nanda, Yashoda, all the residents of Vrindavan, I don't need to go to Mathura. He went. So we understand his leaving Vrindavan is not really leaving Vrindavan, but leaving Vrindavan at the same time. Then there are other descriptions of Krishna reaching out to his devotees. In the first canto, after Queen Kunti offers her prayers and he's about to leave, through the crowd comes Madhur Uttara. And she's carrying in her womb
Parikshit Maharaj. And Ashwatthama has released the Brahmastra. And so she is praying to him, Krishna, Krishna, Mahabaho, that you're the only person who can protect. I don't find anyone else who can do this. And the next scene that's discussed is that the Lord appeared in front of Parikshit Maharaj in the womb. He was the size of the thumb, and there's a whole description provided, blackish form, yellow garments, nicely decorated, and the gada was encircling him, zoom, 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 zoom. So then the question that's usually raised is, so if he was in the womb with Parikshit Maharaj, was Uttara seeing Krishna, or did he say, I'll be back in right a minute, I'll just come back, and he vanished from the scene. And they're all like, where's Krishna, where's Krishna? Oh, he must be in the womb. Krishna was standing right there. They could all take darshan of him while he was in the womb of Uttara as well. He's everywhere. In this case also, he's everywhere. But the description is that he flew on Garuda and came. So if he's there, why didn't he just appear? When Gajendra called, oh, that Supreme Personality unto whom everyone offers prayers, well, the description is he flew on his Garuda and came. So does he come then? Is he everywhere? The answer is both. He's everywhere. But it's a specific pastime that he's coming. It's a very specific, special expression that I'm coming for my devotee. When Krishna came to or lived in Dwaraka, he lived in all 16,108 palaces simultaneously. And each palace had, in each palace, Krishna was doing different activities. Even if it were the same time of the day, and interestingly, in each palace, it was a different time of the day. In one palace, when Narada Muni went, he was playing with his children. Another time, Narada walked out of this palace and went to that palace, he was having his dinner. In another palace, he was doing something else. Different activities, because apparently the times of day were different. There's also the story of King Bahulashwa and Shrutadeva. It's in the Krishna book. It's one of my favorite stories. King Bahulashwa, who was in, I think, the region of Mithila or someplace, which is near the northeastern side of India, he wanted to have darshan of Krishna. He was a very pure devotee. But he realized, how do I have darshan of Krishna? I'm not such a special devotee that Krishna will come to see me. But when Yudhishthira Maharaj was performing the Rajasuya Yajna, Ashwamedha Yajna, each king had to either accept the sovereignty of Yudhishthira Maharaj or challenge. So he decided, I'm going to challenge Yudhishthira Maharaj's supreme position. And I know that Bhima is going to head the armies towards this side. So I'm going to fight with Bhima, and I'm going to defeat Bhima. Or I'm going to give a formidable challenge to Bhima. And to protect Bhima, Krishna will come. Then I will get darshan of Krishna. He was not thinking, to see me, he will come. He said, to see Bhima, to help Bhima, Krishna will come. So he gave such a challenge to Bhima that Bhima was surprised. Wow, I am Vrikodara, I am this really strong person. How is this ordinary king defeating me? It's unbelievable. And immediately he was thinking of, oh, Krishna. And Krishna rushed to the scene. And when he saw Krishna coming, that he had arrived to help Bhima, King Shrutadeva became, King Bahulashwa became very, very happy. And that the story continues that he invited Krishna to come to his house for prasadam, for bhoga. Krishna doesn't eat prasadam. He came for bhoga.
At the same time, there was a Brahmana, poor Brahmana, by the name Shrutadeva, I think, who also invited Krishna, please come to my house for lunch. So Krishna had a scheduling conflict. He was invited to two places on the same day for lunch. Now, for most people, they say, well, I can come on that day, not on this day, because I'm already reserved, scheduled for this. Krishna said yes to both the invitations. So Krishna went to the king's palace, and Krishna traveled with all the sages, Asita Devala, Vyasa, Shukadeva Goswami, Narada, the whole troop was with Krishna. And the king invited them, received them so wonderfully, laid out the best seats, had hundreds of servants serving out hundreds of preparations. They were all received nicely, their feet were washed, he sprinkled the water on his head, musicians were playing very, very nice music, and real, not Rajbhog, this is double Rajbhog for Krishna and all the sages. They were served with such grandeur and opulence. Simultaneously, Krishna and all the sages were also at the Brahmana's house. Now, the Brahmana was very poor. He didn't have a big house. So he laid out straw mat. And he didn't have much wealth to serve varieties of opulent bhoga. He served rice and dal and sabji, something very, very simple. But he, with his family, washed the feet of Krishna and all the sages, sprinkled the water on his head, and very lovingly offered very simple bhoga. As described, Krishna was fully satisfied at both the places. So what's not, whether it's very opulent or very simple, what Krishna is satisfied by is pure loving devotion. So he's very satisfied by the prayers that they have offered, and now he's left, or he's leaving. Yanam, leaving. The prachetas are feeling not fully satisfied. Although they have had a chance to completely absorb the form of Krishna, they are feeling, oh, it is not enough, it is not sufficient. But this is the nature of transcendental vision of Krishna. That the more one sees Krishna, the more one feels not satisfied, while he is very satisfied. Is still not satisfied. That means anandam buddhivardhanam. What Lord Chaitanya describes is, as one is chanting the Hare Krishna mantra properly, then one gets a taste that is increasing constantly. So the yearning is also increasing. Unlike something in the material world, there is some aspiration or desire, we get something, satisfied. And then 5 minutes later, dissatisfied. This is simultaneously satisfying and not fully satisfying. The hearing process is also described like this. In the beginning of 8th canto, as Shukadev Goswami is narrating the different pastimes, he narrates the whole churning of the milk ocean pastime in one verse and moves on. So Parikshit Maharaj stops him and says, can you please go back and describe this whole pastime in detail? And he says, I'm having this difficulty right now. The difficulty is, as I'm hearing from you, my heart is feeling very happy. At the same time, I'm experiencing pangs of insufficiency. I'm not fully satisfied, so keep talking more. It's both the feelings are there. Because when hearing about Krishna, we just heard a few verses ago, it removes anxiety, it removes fear, it removes all attachment, and the heart becomes very, very satisfied. Yet, it is like that it is not satisfying yet. Meaning the thirst for it is increasing. So Prabhupada also describes that the nectar of hearing Krishna Katha is like hot sugarcane juice. But no one drinks hot sugarcane juice. But apparently, in the process of distilling sugarcane juice into rock candy, there is this particular phase of it when it is nice and hot and really thick in sweetness. And said that when you drink that, it burns the throat so much that you cannot drink anymore. Yet, the sweetness is so intense that you cannot stop. So that's the kind of feeling, pure Krishna consciousness, or pure Krishna katha, or Krishna's form or name is supposed to leave us with. Yearning for more, yearning for more. So much so that it is so satisfying that it leaves us yearning for more. That yearning is an experience that comes when one relates with Krishna, like we discussed yesterday, on the transcendental platform. So unless each of us every day connects with Krishna on that platform, it will not really come to fruition. So on that platform, in a very practical sense, to me means regardless of what's happening with our body, with our mind, regardless of what's happening in our circumstances of our lives, the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, the service of the Vaishnavas, the service of the deity, whatever is necessary, the hearing process, is done as I am a part and parcel of Krishna, and this is my relationship with Krishna, and I want to take it very seriously. That's the platform. Because in the Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, that's the platform, which is transcendental. Beyond that, we don't have full realization to describe Krishna in choice words or understand the different flavors or nectar of the holy name. The nectar of the holy name is the the daily execution of our sadhana with as much attention as we can put in. So, today's MSF. So I don't want to take too much more time. Any thoughts, comments? Jai Jagannath Prabhu, Ashraya Prabhu, and yeah, mic's on your left.
So the Supreme Lord is not attached, and you were describing the attachment that we're used to on the material platform. And we are encouraged to evolve our attachment to Krishna.
Right.
And then generally, because we're not perceiving Krishna directly, we're also encouraged to evolve our attachment to Guru, Sadhu, like
correct.
That. but the material bodily conception of life is so polluted that on slight provocation, and you know, the whole relationship is nullified. There's a statement I read from Prabhupada recently.
Right.
So I was wondering, and it can be a very painful experience when that happens, making it hard for the devotee to evolve his attachment again. So I was wondering, also based on your discussion yesterday about the Lord being Shuddhaya, completely pure, and therefore beyond appreciation for those who are situated in the modes. So how does one evolve an attachment to Krishna and devotees of Krishna in a healthy way, where it won't damage them if there shall be some, you know, like the Lord disappearing all of a sudden,
right.
The devotee disappearing. How does one evolve an attachment that isn't disturb his development?
Attachment without proper knowledge creates sentimentalism, or is sentimental. The sentimental is, I am attached to Krishna, I am attached to the devotees. On what basis? Why should I be attached to the devotees? I'm attached to, we use the phrase, members of family, people of the world. And Krishna consciousness means now I'm attached to the devotees. No, that's not exactly it. The attachment is that I'm, and this is, some people will say, well, that's not so easy. Yeah, well, yeah, it's not easy. Who said it was? But each one of us has to consider, what is it that I'm attached, by what characteristic am I attached to that devotee? Meaning, serving the Vaishnavas is important. Relating to the Vaishnavas is important. Gukhya makhyati prichati is important. And by that, Krishna is pleased. By that, Rupa Goswami and the entire disciplic succession is pleased. And this is the method of elevation. Versus, like we say, attachment on the basis of body and mind. Oh, they glorify and, you know, really satisfy my false ego. I love them very much. They pinch my false ego. Whew, someone else, please. Or this situation, that situation. And that will be there because the heart is still not fully out of the materialistic way of looking at things. So it is there. So a devotee must carefully understand and look at the proportion of, you know, the wrong conceptions that I have, and then move towards the right conception. Because we are not fully impure or fully pure. We're somewhere in between. Somewhere in between, anywhere between this end and that end, anywhere in between. And so the consideration of a devotee is, why am I feeling like this? What is going on? What is the reasons that I'm feeling what I'm feeling? I mean, these are things that every devotee must do. It's not just, I wake up, my rounds are chanted, I do this service, something, and I go to sleep without any introspection. A devotee who doesn't introspect doesn't last too long. Meaning it'll very quickly become so mechanical that they cannot relish what Krishna's teaching. Because Krishna only teaches not so much what's wrong out there, but how we are looking at things from here. That's what Krishna is teaching. In Arjuna's case, for example, in the Bhagavad Gita, it was not that the war is wrong, it's not that, that's not what Krishna was telling him. He says, what is your consideration? How are you thinking about these things? Arjuna gives 5 reasons, and Krishna defeats all of them to adjust his conceptions. So a devotee must be inward looking, considering, you know, all of that. I don't want to get into the details because that itself is a long class, if you will, but introspective. And part of that introspection requires honesty, and it requires some, I guess, strength or courage to face up and then make whatever necessary adjustments that are necessary, that are needed. Prabhu, I misunderstood. Prabhu, I something. Prabhu, this. Whatever is necessary needs to happen. That's the exercise. Among devotees, we can still say, oh no, maybe they are not pure. But the issue happens with gurus. Oh, such and such and such, something happens and reject the guru. This is not new, it has happened so many times. It continues to happen. Or even if they don't reject the guru, the heart just closes. And whatever the guru says, then it sounds like bitter medicine. Even if they're nice, then there's like, Suddenly, after working so hard to remove the jaundice of the liver, according to Rupa Goswami, and get some sweetness in the relationship with the devotees of Krishna, then again the bitterness sets back. It's called regression. And I will say something very different. It happens in the lives of devotees that we get introduced to Krishna consciousness. We embrace it like we have never looked at or never interacted with it like this ever before. This is so new. This is so fantastic. We take it all in so quickly. Zoom, zoom, zoom. We make all the changes in life. We renounce this. We reject family. We sleep on the hard floor. We only have something to eat. Whatever we do things that are really so dramatically drastic. And then a point in time comes that everything looks, whoa, why am I doing this? It's important for every devotee at some point in time in life to ask oneself, why am I doing what I am doing? What is the reason? Because the reason for which we might have taken up Krishna consciousness is not the reason why we should be continuing it. For example, artho arthaarthi jigyasu. Somebody was in difficulty, distress, just no aim for life, just wandering about, happened to stumble into Krishna consciousness, something. But that's not how we take Krishna consciousness further. I was in distress, someone came and helped me, and really this was helpful. It doesn't mean we're in distress for the rest of life. So every little, some point in time, we must ask ourselves, why am I doing this? If I'm still doing it for the same reasons that I first came to Krishna consciousness, my conceptions haven't changed, that means. Or I should move from here forward with proper new conceptions. I'm an eternal servant of Krishna. I need to learn from Guru. I need to overcome whatever those conceptions. If you hold on to the same conception, then that's where we're always beginning from, actually. So every time there is a difficulty and we regress, then we will start from the very point where we had originally started. Because the conceptions are still the same old ones there. So to recalibrate, if you like, conceptions is important. Then whatever is the regression, we come to that point where we had recalibrated. That's where progress happens. Another point is that generally devotees think that the path of progress in Krishna consciousness is a smooth 45 degree line. You know, everything happens. I started bhakti like this and zoom, wow, I'm going to Vaikuntha. The progress is never a straight line. Actually, the progress is a curve that goes up and down, but in general, it is moving upwards. Because there are ups, then there are downs. This is anishtuta bhakti. But in principle, it should be moving upward. For different persons, it's high peaks and very, very low troughs, and then high peaks and low troughs. For some people, it's like, however, each individual's conceptions of things. But it's never a straight line. We should not expect a straight line progress in Krishna consciousness. It's just against the principle of anartha nivritti. It just doesn't work like that. Yeah.
Just a quick follow-up.
Sure.
On the point of introspection.
Mm.
So I have experience on a personal level and also vicariously of a person having like a very simple mentality. So their level of introspection is generally quite simple. It may not be so profound.
Yeah.
And it seems that they can still be progressive even though it's not a very deep introspection. Whereas others, they're very introspective, but they have very complex minds.
Super complicated.
And such introspection will actually make it harder for them to develop the relationship with the Lord. Yeah.
So first of all, the word introspection does not mean we don't speak to anyone. That's not Rupa Goswami's instruction. Introspection means with another devotee. Gukhyam akhyati. Gukhyam akhyati has to be expressed. Otherwise it's not introspection, it's called mental platform. It just goes on, and on. And interestingly, the conclusion one will come to will be the same old conceptions that we began our Krishna consciousness with. It always comes back to those conceptions. So we may change the dress, we may change behaviors, we definitely change language, but we operate from those conceptions. And whatever introspection we do will be on the basis of, on the platform of, those old conceptions. So that's not introspection. It should be on the basis of new conceptions that we are developing, or we should be developing. So when we read Bhagavatam or hear Bhagavatam every day, it is meant to instill new conceptions or strengthen new or recent conceptions of life. And then we operate from those conceptions. What did I hear in Bhagavatam class today? That's how I should be operating on. Versus, doesn't matter what I heard, something happens and I go back to 6 years ago, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, 25 years ago. Because my conception hasn't changed. Thank you. Acharya Prabhu had something.
This is not the point of the class, but you mentioned King Bahulashva.
Yes.
And this is a question that I've had in different circumstances. He is going to battle for the purpose because he wants to see Krishna, basically. So, how does a devotee know when he can, like, we're not going to be doing that thing, but in principle, you have to imagine that he must have engaged so many persons in battle against Bhima and his army, and many of them must have died.
Died.
For the purpose that he wanted to see Krishna. Nothing else was that he could have surrendered to Yudhishthira Maharaj. So how does he... You know, how does a devotee know that that's... I mean, Ramachandra can engage so many monkeys and they all die, but he's the Supreme Lord. So how does a devotee know when it's like, my endeavor is so pure that whatever happens is okay? You know?
Yeah, we don't think like that. Bahulashva was not thinking that Krishna's going to come see me. He was very humble. The humility was, he will come for Bhima. I will get a darshan at that time. So he's convinced that for the sake of a pure devotee, Krishna will always come. That's the principle he's operating on. For himself, what have I done that Krishna will ever come to see me? Like the other day, Jai Jagannath Prabhu was quoting Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's pastime. Oh, Guru Maharaj, you forgot your spectacles. Let me run quickly and bring them. No, I'll just stand behind a devotee. And when Krishna sees them, his glance might befall upon me. Or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was standing looking at Lord Jagannath, and this little scrawny old lady pushing everyone climbs up the Garuda Stambha, places her foot on Lord Chaitanya's shoulder, looking at Jagannath. And so Govinda is like, Hari Bol, Mataji, do you know what you're doing? No, it's okay. Such eagerness to see Lord Jagannath. Himanshu was, Maitreya Uvacha. May not be the same, but that's what I was thinking about. So anyway, so the mood is very different. How does he know? He's being inspired by Krishna at that moment. And his devotional acumen is such that he's not being inspired that, yes, for you I will come. But the acumen was for his devotee. That is the relationship between Krishna and his devotees. I mean, it's there. For us, we offer prayers, my dear Krishna. When I stand in front of the deity form, my dear Krishna, when will I know that you are Krishna here? For us, it's this whole different set of I'm not talking about you, I'm just saying general. Okay. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. I have a good news for all of you. No Ishtagosti. I see Jai Jagannath is full dancing. Hare Krishna. Because today's MSF, things are happening. Oh, meet some other day. Hare Krishna. You're welcome.